The United States continues to lead the world in the number of cases of COVID-19. Just yesterday, the case count for the country crossed the 3 million line. Is it the second wave? Is it a resurgence of the first wave? Does it really matter? Both Oregon and California have watched cases rise more sharply in recent weeks, forcing a face mask mandate from Oregon's governor and the reclosing of some businesses in California. Once a week, we visit with Dr. Jim Shames, Jackson County's medical director, for answers to many questions about COVID-19 and the virus that causes it. Welcome back, Dr. Shames.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Because of last week's schedule shift, we actually have you just 5 days after the last time we talked to you, but it's been an action-packed 5 days, and just give us a general perspective on what you see happening out there.
Well, the really big picture is sort of what you said in your intro, which is that, we have a resurgence in cases. Is it a part of the first wave? Is it a second wave, it doesn't really matter. It's just that our behaviors were changed, and we've seen a great number of cases all over the country. There's been a shift in the demographics. You know, now that people are returning to work, it's tending to be younger individuals in comparison to what we saw, at the very beginning of the outbreak.
I noticed that 30 to 39 seems to be a particular growth set of ages for the virus.
Yeah, right. And what that means is that there's a lot more activity among folks. People are spreading the disease, significantly so. But that over time, we're going to continue to see the same effects, just with a bit of a delay. The effects being that the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions are going to get the most sick and be hospitalized in a greater extent. So I think what this says is that we're going to have a lot more spread, but eventually the effects of the virus will take its toll just like it did, early on.
So when I look at the numbers, let's see, I'm looking at the July 6th update from yesterday where Jackson County reports 152 cases, past or present. The week before was 114, so that's a big lift over time. Now, I did notice over the last 5 days, though, the numbers went 15, 9, 7, 3, 1. Is that a trend you take any comfort in, or is that just an accident of when people were counted and tested?
No, I do take comfort in that. We knew that we had simultaneous clusters of infection in families, extended families, some workplaces, and the fear was it was just going to kind of get out of control from there. The fact that the numbers have come down is encouraging. It would be great to see this remain as a trend, and what it would imply is that we had some risky behavior resulting in outbreaks. We were able to contact trace and get people identified and then put it down. So I'm hoping that's in fact the case.
Now, with the contact tracing, I'm reading more reports as time goes on of health officials running into some obstacles of people who just refused to tell their story or who they were with or any of that stuff. Has that become an issue in Jackson County at all?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are people that don't want to share information, or it takes a number of phone calls. Some people never answer the phone. Some people just don't talk to the government. So I think that's why it takes some skill to do this, is that you have to kind of deal with the human nature you've got in front of you and convince people that it's in their best interest and their community's best interest to cooperate with public health.
Tell us again who the contact tracers are in Jackson County's case. Are there people already working at the health department, or have you brought some people on? And if so, what kinds of expertise have they brought?
We've mostly utilized people within the health department. So we trained everybody up so that, any person really who works for Health and Human Services could become a contact tracer almost. And that worked out pretty well. And it gave us time to really think about what we wanted the structure to be, who we wanted to hire. Our approach is that we want professionals who really are going to do a great job and who are well-trained, under supervision, and I think there's other approaches. That's just the one that we've decided to take. So it takes a while to get that work set set up.
All right. And as you see the rise in cases, is there a relative level of severity of the cases versus what you were seeing in the first spike a few months ago?
I didn't think I articulated it very well earlier, but what I'm trying to say is that the people who are getting in the hospital, people who are on ventilators, people who get really sick, are really going to look the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that a lot of the people who are infectious now are those that are out and about. They tend to be younger, they tend to be healthier,
mm-hmm.
and so percentage-wise, fewer of them are ending up hospitalized or seriously ill. But as their numbers increase due to just normal social interactions, we're going to see increasing numbers of the elderly and those at risk.
Okay, I get it now. So, yeah, younger people, the ones moving around, so doing the spreading.
Yeah.
Now, I know, and I forgot to ask about this last time, but you were quoted in discussing some of the parties that were there was of concern between the two counties, Jackson and Josephine. You were concerned about super spreaders. Give us the concept first and then what's developed on that particular case since that time.
Right. Well, first of all, I don't want to do or say anything that might conceivably lead to identification of an individual.
Mm-hmm.
The concept is, and we're really pretty unclear on exactly what this is, but unbeknownst to them, there are individuals who end up spreading their infection to many other people before they're done. And I suspect it has to do with partly just an act of nature that they produce a lot of virus at given period of time. Perhaps it's the way they talk. Maybe they just produce a lot of mucus when they talk. Undoubtedly, it has to do with behaviors. So they are around others in close proximity. Perhaps they go from party to party. But the bottom line is that the majority of people with COVID don't end up passing it to anybody else. I think it's like 80% of the transmission, at least, is occurring by 20% of the people. And within those 20% of the people, there's a handful that do an awful lot of spreading. So, we had at least one individual that, seemed to be responsible for the spread of the disease in multiple locations, and ultimately we had a lot of cases from it.
Ultimately, do you end up worrying about things like, honestly, are the people who are fun to be around the people who you worry about the most because they visit the most parties and talk the most, that sort of thing? I mean, I'm not trying to be too funny here, but it's getting there.
I've only read a couple of cases about sort of what the characteristics are. They seem to be a bit all over the map, but the opportunity is there, like the super spreader who is singing in a chorus indoors.
Right.
Many, many people got infected from that one individual, but that was a setup.
Is that the Skagit Valley case you're talking about from a few months ago?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was like, 50 people, more than 50 people infected in one chorus. Yeah. Dr. Jim Shames is Jackson County's medical director at Jackson County Health and Human Services. He joins us once a week to talk about COVID questions. He's back with us to answer yours at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. John in Talent dropped off a question. He says, is there a method that can be done at home to clean older N95 masks for future use? He already has the masks from fire season.
There's all sorts of methods that are being used for professional masks.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was talking about using exposure to the sun, sort of natural ultraviolet light.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't follow through on that to find out how serious a technique that really was, but somebody brought that up to me, and I think it was a healthcare professional. Maybe check that out. The thing of concern is that if you're not careful, you can sort of break down the delicate fibers that make the N95 as effective as it is. So, just washing it or things you might think were pouring hydrogen peroxide through it, for example, may not work. It may change the mask. So I do my homework, but I don't know the answer.
All right, so don't just chuck it in the washing machine, for example.
Right, that's fine for your cloth masks. You're asking them to do a different service.
Right. Okay. Well, and then that is a big difference there because the cloth masks aren't going to like screen out the tiny, tiny particles, which is what an N95 mask will do, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, so an N95 is, if it's fit tested and it's clean and it's used properly, will offer more protection to the individual wearing the mask. And a cloth mask will always offer protection for others from you, and depending how tight fit it is, how the weave is set up, et cetera, it will offer varying amounts of protection of you from others.
All right. So, all right. One thing I've learned too about mask fit is that with N95 in particular, you want to make sure it's the right size. Too big is obviously a problem, but too small, ouch.
Yeah.
Went through that recently.
And there's little valves that they have in them that mm-hmm. some have. Those are problematic when you're trying to stop the spread of an infection.
So you'd mentioned last week, I remember somebody called and asked about that. Yeah, you want to stay away from those valves and other people.
Yes. Or put a cloth mask
over it. That's right. That's right. Okay. Phone call here from Linda in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Jim Shames from Jackson County Health and Human Services.
Good morning, Dr. Shames. I enjoy your weekly calls.
Thank you.
My question is, I've been hearing more and more people, not just on the news, but here in the community, say that people need to get out, start moving again to build up immunity to this virus. Can we build up immunity to the virus without actually getting the virus?
No, not unless you produce a vaccine that fools your body to do so.
Okay, so getting out and moving around before we get a vaccine is not going to help us build up immunity so that we all stay safe and can get moving.
Oh, I think getting out, you know, literally getting out of the house, out of doors, is beneficial for all sorts of reasons. But, you know, if you come across the virus and it makes you sick, it's gonna make you sick.
So, and do we know yet if getting the virus gives us lifetime immunity like it does with measles?
Yeah, we don't know.
Okay,
we really don't know yet.
All right, so Linda, are you hearing people say things like along the line of, if you get a little bit of the virus, it won't make you sick, but you'll start building immunity? Is that the essence of what you're hearing?
Yes. If you're exposed but you just really don't get sick,
mm-hmm.
then you're good to go. And how this came up is I'm going to be going hiking with some friends that are coming into town that have been social distancing, and they're feeling a little stir-crazy
mm-hmm.
with, you know, this. One's coming from California where they did have a stay-at-home order longer than we had. And, you know, when I share this with people, they say, you know, we just need to get moving. We need to get out. We need to build up our immunity. And I just don't see that happening based on, and I'm not a doctor, but based on my readings, that I just didn't think we could build up immunity to the virus without actually getting it so that we don't get sick.
All right.
Perhaps what people are talking about is building up their immune system,
mm-hmm.
that is keeping their capability of fighting off infection healthy and strong,
uh-huh.
And immunity would be specific to this virus. So you can, if you eat well and you exercise, you get plenty of rest, you keep your body strong, you are in a better position to fight any infection.
Any?
Yeah, including this one, presumably. Let me say a word about getting out.
Sure.
I think getting out of doors is a really good idea, both because people are stir-crazy and because it's the safest way to interact with others, taking a walk. Once you get inside, and this is that controversy about aerosols, which is coming up. Once you get inside, it is much more likely that the virus can be in the air. I mean, if aerosolization of the virus is a thing, which it probably is, that means that some of the virus is riding around inside on microscopic little particles and you run the risk of getting infected even if you are greater than 6 feet away from others. That's what it looks like. And that, you know, our experience would suggest that very few people get infected when they are congregating outdoors, even though we don't recommend that people get close to each other without a mask, outdoors or indoors. But if you look at the protests, for example, where a lot of people wore masks but some didn't, and there were clearly thousands of people all over the country coming together out of doors, and we haven't really seen an uptick of infection from that. And yet we have example after example after example of similar activities indoors where there was a tremendous amount of spread, like, you know, the the church service in Crook County, you know, last month.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. And La Grande is a huge number there. And so, Linda, thank you for the call and for relaying the concerns. And you have been paying attention. That's clear. So let me ask this, Dr. Shames, if part of it just gets down to orientation, if you're sitting indoors gabbing with friends, you're facing each other versus outdoors, you're all sort of faced in the same direction, even at a protest march.
Interesting point. Hadn't thought about that. Yeah, there's a lot of variables. We're moving so quickly on trying to figure out what the ground rules are here that, you know, for example, a lot of the information that we're basing actions on are not even, you know, published data. They haven't been peer-reviewed. We're just soaking up information, all of us, trying to do the right thing, and we might be right, we might be wrong, but certainly the trend of indoor versus outdoor seems to be true. We're just not completely sure what all the variables are.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned the controversy over aerosols that led one of the newscasts from NPR during the program yesterday about the fact that there is a greater concern at the moment that things, it's not that they can stay on surfaces, but that they can hang in the air longer than was previously thought.
Yeah. And we've known for a long time about infections that can be transmitted that way. Measles is a great example where, you know, somebody can walk through an airline concourse and you know, people will get infected just because they were within 100 feet. Many diseases will spread that way. We weren't sure about COVID, but the evidence is beginning to accumulate that there is at least some aerosol spread. Again, making, you know, being indoors, especially indoors, unmasked, risky behavior when you're around people that aren't your family.
Dr. Jim Shames, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with our weekly chat about COVID-19. And you can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I noticed statements from both Klamath County and Jackson County about counting active cases because of something that changed at the Oregon Health Authority. Can you detail what the difference is there?
Counting active cases.
Yeah, and I saw, I wish I'd clipped it this morning, but there was a statement about the county, something about cases that are active versus...
I see.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that we're trying to give people a realistic idea of what the numbers mean. So I think the issue was recovered versus infectious.
Yes.
Yeah. So after about 9 days of symptom onset, people essentially are not able to transmit the virus anymore. At least that's what we think. There may be exceptions to that, but for the average person on COVID, that's the reason we say that you need to isolate for 10 days. And then after 10 days, you know, if your symptoms have at least decreased and you're afebrile for 3 days, you can go back into society because you're not likely to be infectious. We had other terminology we were using that was based on length of time, and it was all very confusing. And I think what the public needs to understand is how many people are currently living with COVID who could conceivably infect others. That seemed like a better statistic. I don't remember what those numbers are for us, but the majority of our cases have already come and gone. They're no threat to the public anymore.
Mm-hmm. I did notice, though, that when I looked for the ever hospitalized within the numbers yesterday, these are not on the daily release, but you have to dig a little further onto the site to find them. Jackson County's ever hospitalized is at 14 now, mm-hmm. when it was 7 about a mm-hmm. month ago. So mm-hmm. clearly there have been some more cases in the hospital. That doesn't sound like enough pressure to start causing big concerns of the hospitals in either Medford or Ashland.
No. And we all need to remember that there was a lot of hustling and bustling that occurred early on because we had no idea how mm-hmm. bad it was going to get here. So we put things in place. We set up processes, you know, figured out how we would respond to a surge. So even if the numbers do get pretty large, I think we're much better prepared now to surge. But there's no evidence that we're at that place at this point.
In terms of events where people can get together or places, bars and parties, is that about the same level of concern for you? I just have this image of people getting too close to each other, laughing hard, drinking hard, all that sort of thing, facing each other.
Well, bars are really high risk. it really, it's just kind of their nature, mm-hmm. you know, bars and gyms. And then it obviously depends on the party. If people are really respecting the social distancing and having their party outdoors, and if they're going to get close and, you know, go to the drink table, they put on a mask, you could safely have a party. I think it's much harder to safely, you know, go into a bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why California's been closing down bars in the L.A. area. Yeah. You know, I notice as I look at the numbers, we're getting close to 10% of the American population infected. Are you concerned that we will or have reached a point where people just say, the heck with it, we're going to stop fighting it?
Oh, sure. I can understand the sentiment. It's a very dangerous, approach. And I doubt that, you know, the elderly and those with chronic underlying conditions are saying that. I think really what you're saying is, you know, we're willing to sacrifice some members of our society so the rest of us can go about our business. And I don't think that's the kind of country we are. I don't think we're going to land there.
No, but there certainly are some people who've said things in those terms, including the lieutenant governor of Texas, but that's a few weeks old and talked about a lot. Dr. Jim Shames is Jackson County's medical director working out of Jackson County Health and Human Services. He joins us once a week for several weeks now to talk about COVID-19 issues and to take your questions and comments, and we very much appreciate that. Dr. Shames, talk to you in a week.
Okay, good talking to you, Jeffrey.
All right, take it easy.